Welcome, welcome. I'm Bill Tinker, and you're listening to Dialysis Talk on Blog Talk Radio, where we discuss the healthcare issue of dialysis patients along with other present-day healthcare issues. Dialysis Talk is brought to you by dialysis advocates. The information and opinions expressed by our guests are theirs alone and do not reflect the opinion of Dialysis Talk or dialysis advocates. We have a great show lined up for you tonight, and with that, let's turn it over to tonight's host.
Hello, everyone, and I'm grateful to be here, and I'm glad that you took the time to join us. I'm happy to have with us tonight Josh Morrison. Josh is the co-founder and executive director of Waitlist Zero, which is a nonprofit founded by kidney donors. His mission is to expand the support for living kidney donations. Josh, who I'm honored to have on the show, he received his BA from Columbia University, and he's also an attorney receiving his JD from Harvard Law School. How wonderful. And thank you, Josh, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so glad
to have you here. And as a living kidney donor, that in itself is just, to me, is an awesome thing. Can you tell me how you decided to become a living donor and talk to me about Waitlist Zero?
Sure. So my decision to become a living donor, I think, was a little bit unlike most living donors, because I actually gave to someone that I didn't know when I donated. So my interest in donating had first begun in, I guess it was 2007, in my first year of law school. I read an article by a woman who had a kidney failure and had needed a transplant, and it really struck me. It was really kind of heart-wrenching that there were four different people who told her that they would donate to her and then backed out. And I could just imagine if that happened to me, and just the difficulty of asking in the first place, and just how demoralized I'd feel. And the other thing that really struck me about the article was that it said, you know, you can donate and you'll save someone's life, and you know the long term risk to you, it's not zero, but it's, you know, compared to the gain to the other person and the life you're saving, you know, it's pretty minimal. It doesn't decrease your life expectancy at all. The surgery is laparoscopic. You know, there's maybe a sort of 1% chance of kind of long term risk. And that really struck me. And then so I thought, oh, well, you know, maybe this would be a good idea for me to do. Maybe I should do this. And then I kind of forgot about it for about a year until I read another article about people who give their kidneys to strangers. And then I sort of started taking it more seriously. You know, I kind of remembered it, and I started taking it more seriously, and I looked into it. And, you know, after a while, sort of a long process of talking to my family about it and things like that, I decided to go ahead and donate. And I think you know, when I reflect and think about my own life and why I donated, I think it's because I've been, I think, really fortunate in life. I had a really loving and fairly prosperous family growing up who were really supportive of me. I was lucky enough to do well in school and to have, you know, good prospects. And I really felt like I should be giving something back and that I owed something back. And I was also just really excited about this sort of ability to do something really exceptional and out of the ordinary and save someone's life. I kind of referred to it as sort of my personal Mount Everest. And so that's kind of why I decided to donate, which I did about 3 years ago.
And that is a Mount Everest.
Oh. Go ahead.
That is a Mount Everest. That's offering to, as a dialysis patient, I'm saying to you, that is an offering of greatness, and I appreciate that you did. So continue on. I'm sorry. I was just in awe at what you were saying.
Thank you. Well, you know, it's interesting because obviously it's a major life decision, and it was a big deal for me to donate just because it was important to me. But, I mean, I also don't want to give the impression that kidney donors need to be heroes to donate, because, you know, it really is like I said, you know, it's not, I'm not saying it's costless, you know, it's a real choice that matters. And, but also, you know, the only time I think about my, you know, sort of health in, or, you know, my donation is when people ask me about it. You know, it's, I'm the same kind of healthy person I was before, you know, I ran a half marathon a couple of months ago. And the surgery, you know, my dad had, has had, you know, knee replacement surgery, and that, you know, is, you know, 1,000 times more difficult than the kidney donation was, where I was sort of off painkillers after about a prescription painkillers after maybe a week. And I really do think people, you know, I'm very proud to have donated, and I feel very lucky to have donated. But I feel like people, you know, have this sense that it's this major life change, or that it's this major sacrifice, in a way that I think, you know, really for most people that donate, you know, like I said, it's a serious decision. It's a major life decision. But like I said, you don't need to be a hero to donate. And so it's really something I feel really, really lucky to do. Now, my organization, Weightless Zero, we're a new organization. I started it with my co-founder, Thomas Kelly, about 5 months ago. He is another non-directed kidney donor. He's about my age. We're both sort of on the younger side, in our 20s. And we created the organization to promote living kidney donation. And the reason we wanted to do that is because there are each year, about 20,000 more people go on the waiting list than receive a kidney. And that actually undercounts the need, because there's as many as 80,000 people on dialysis who could receive a transplant or medically eligible for a transplant, but never even go on the waiting list. And that might be because they're not educated about it, because they're nervous about, you know, getting a transplant when dialysis is working out okay for them. But transplants are life-saving. You know, when I see the impact that they have on people's lives, not just in terms of, you know, extending life, but just allowing people often to go back to employment, or just to, you know, not have to do dialysis several times a week, it's really dramatic. And so we wanted to help bring that to other people. And, you know, deceased donation is important. Everyone should sign their organ donor card. But it's not going to be enough to end that really big shortage that I mentioned before, because, you know, there's less than, I think, 1% of the whole population that dies each year can become an organ donor, about 10,000 or so people. And actually, about 75% of those already donate. So even if everyone who could be a deceased donor did donate, there would still be a gap of more than 10,000 people each year who would need a transplant and not get one. And that's why we think living donation is so important, and that's why we do the work we do in order to support policies that would increase living donation. I think there's a lot of those that would be really effective.
And you're so right. And there's so little information out, as you well know, about kidney disease, about donation. I know personally, I've been on for 15 years, and no one even suggested kidney transplantation to me, or even educated me on it until 4 years. I had been on this machine for 4 years. Which was sad.
Absolutely. And that's something we really want to change. That's one of the policies that we want to make happen, is we think that everyone who's on dialysis, who's medically eligible for transplant, should receive comprehensive education about transplantation. And not only that they should receive it, but we think that their families should hear about it too. Because, you know, there's been recent programs and studies of home visits to patients' families by medical professionals that help explain transplantation and the options and things like that. And, you know, what they've shown is that that's actually really increased transplant, and I think it makes a lot of sense that it would, because, you know, there's a lot – transplant's a complicated medical thing to explain, And first, you know, right now our society is failing patients, and it's leaving patients to try to figure out these things on their own, and their difficult medical decisions and different medical, you know, facts. And then once they've decided, okay, I think I want a transplant, if they want a living donation, they need to then explain it to their family. But again, they're not a medical professional. They don't necessarily know all the ins and outs. And, you know, as I think we all know, it's a very uncomfortable, difficult conversation to have with someone about, well, you know, I kind of could use you donating me an organ, right? No one, you know, I don't like asking people to lend me money, you know. And so I think that people don't acknowledge that, and that's not, and society really doesn't acknowledge that. And I that's something we need to change. And at Wait List Zero, we want to change policy so that society will support transplant patients and support donors better.
Yes, and I think that mandatory informing, once a patient finds out that they are reaching a stage where their kidney failure means that they have to go on dialysis, they need to be given the option and informed about kidney transplantation, just like they're told about the center that they may have to, you know, go to, or given information about vascular surgeon. You know, let's give options and give options earlier so that
exactly.
they can live longer lives. You're absolutely right. And exactly what does your organization do? And I also want to know about how the organization lead to your coalition, coalition to promote living kidney donation.
Yeah, no, I'd love to talk about that. So our organization has kind of three different program areas that we work on. And anyway, I should say again, we're a newish organization, we're only a few months old. So a lot of this is things, you know, we're still really building, and we hope to grow a lot. The first thing we do is policy advocacy. What we advocate for is transplant support, making it easy for patients to ask for donation and easy and attractive for donors to donate. And that means policies like paying the lost wages of donors. It means, like we've talked about, educating patients. It means expanding access to paired kidney donation for patients who have a willing donor who's not compatible with them. And it also means supporting the donor in other ways, like providing health insurance to alleviate any sort of risks of donation, and giving the proper resources to make sure that there's annual follow-up for the lifetime of the donor. So I'll talk a little bit more about our first advocacy campaign. But before that, I want to talk a little bit shift to the coalition. But before that, I want to just mention the other two things we do. One is that we want to mobilize kidney living donors to talk about their experience and to advocate for living donation and for the interests of living donors. And the final thing we do is we want to work with religious communities to help them support people in their congregation with end-stage renal disease, particularly with helping them find transplants in their community.
Oh, awesome.
Thank you. And so the Coalition to Promote Living Kidney Donation is something that we're just starting to build. We have, I think, 8 member organizations now, and they include the American Association for Kidney Patients, Donate Life America Northwest, the John Brockington Foundation, and the Transplant Recipient International Organization, among several others. And what this coalition is it's been built around our first advocacy campaign. That campaign is to persuade a federal agency to support living kidney donation. So that agency is called the Health Resources and Services Administration, or HRSA, and they're the agency that's in charge of organ donation.
So what is HRSA?
Okay. Say that again?
What is HRSA? H-R-S-A? What is HRSA?
Yeah, exactly. HRSA is how you spell that. It's the Health Resources and Services Administration. And it's part of the Health and Human Services Agency. But really, the important, you know, there's a lot of complicated jargon in all this. But this is the agency that's responsible for organ donation in the United States. So, for example, they run the contract with UNOS to manage the waiting list. Now, HRSA does a lot of great work. You know, I think they do important work with UNOS. They do the National Living Donor Assistance Center, which pays for travel expenses for donors who make under three times the poverty line. So I think, you know, there's a lot to admire with HRSA, but there's some things that HRSA needs to change. And in particular, they've been less than fully comfortable with supporting efforts to increase living kidney donation or encourage living kidney donation. So there's sort of two things in particular that we want them to change to get them to support it more. The first one is that each year HRSA budgets about $7 million for grants for projects to increase living kidney donation. So these are projects to increase solid organ donation, but not living donation. So these are projects. Yeah, so these grants go to projects run by, you know, transplant centers or organ procurement organizations or academics or nonprofits. And the grants are run under a statute. They come from a statute that says that what they're for is to increase solid organ donation, including living donation. But HRSA has actually decided to exclude living donation from these grants. So if your project has living kidney donation, tries to increase living kidney donation, you're not allowed to apply for these grants. And now we want them to change that policy. There's one other thing we're trying to do now with HRSA, and that's that each year they have an annual performance report which reports their goals and how they've done on those goals. So, for example, you know, one goal is that they want a certain number of deceased organ donors. And then they say, well, you know, our goal for this year was, you know, let's say, you know, 10,000 donors, and we got 9,500 donors. Now, right now, all of those goals are related to deceased donation, and we want some of the goals to include living donation goals as well. So that's the campaign is, that's what we're trying to achieve. We need a lot of people's support to help achieve that, because the way we're going to achieve that is by demonstrating public support and showing that there's that people want living donation. Because right now, HRSA is worried that, well, you know, if we encourage living donation, and you know, there are, you know, some people, you know, there's a 3 in 10,000 chance that a donor will die in surgery. It's a small chance, but you know, some people are going to have that. It's a, you know, it's informed consent. It's a risk that you know that you're taking. And they worry that, well, what if, you know, this happens and there's bad publicity, or, you know, maybe it's not our role to encourage them donation. And so in order to persuade them otherwise, we need to get people like you listening on this call to demonstrate their support to HRSA for living kidney donation. And the way that we've been doing that is we've been building this coalition of nonprofits that represent thousands of members or tens of thousands of members throughout the country to work with us. And first we met with HRSA on January 16th. It was a very productive meeting. I really admire a lot of the work they do there, and the people there were very nice and helpful. And they expressed that these policies are under reconsideration. And so the next step is for that we created a change.org petition, an online petition. You can find it probably most easily by just Googling living donation petition or weightless zero petition or something like that. And we have about 5,000 signatures. We had people post reviews on HRSA's Facebook page. We recommend sort of a 4-star review, which says, you know, good work on the work we're doing so far, but it can be improved by getting a living donation, and by writing letters of support. And then what we want to do, you know, we want to get other nonprofits on board, and we want to start getting legislators and the media involved in order to kind of demonstrate, you know, sort of public support to HRSA. So that's what the campaign has been so far, and we're really optimistic about our chances of success. We think that you know, the people at HRSA are smart and they are really well-meaning. And so I think if we can show them that this is a well-supported policy that can save a lot of lives, I think that they will ultimately decide to change it to the health living donation.
Awesome. That's great. Their budget of $7 million for projects is kind of low when you look at the population of people in need. And that's awesome that you all are taking on that. So I'm hearing from you about your thoughts on compensation for donors. So you are pro for that.
So I wouldn't necessarily say we're pro compensation. I think that, you know, there's a question of what compensation means. So when I started, what I mean is there are some things that I think we can all agree that donors should receive, basically sort of removing their kind of financial incentives. I think we can agree that if someone loses wages because they want to donate a kidney, the government, you know, should pay those wages. That's not an incentive to donate. That just removes a disincentive to donate. That just makes it, you know, a bit easier to donate. And, you know, the fact is that even paying for those lost wages would, I think, make a big difference, because I've read that on average people lose about a month's wages, worth of wages in terms, you know, both in lost wages but also in travel expenses and childcare expenses and things like that in order to donate. And a lot of us don't have a month's worth of wages to give up, even if we do want to do a transplant. So I think that's something that would be a really great idea, but I wouldn't necessarily call that compensation or incentive. To me, the compensation question is more like, whenever you donated a kidney, you got, you know, $50,000? And, you know, it's not a sort of academic or crazy number in a way, because each transplant saves conservatively about $130,000 to the federal government. Each transplant that's covered by Medicare, which is about 60% of them. If we wanted to pay each donor $50,000 when they donated, that's something we could do, and it's probably something that would save, it'd probably increase transplants by quite a bit. And so when I started out getting interested in this issue, I was pretty sympathetic to that kind of incentive or compensation. But, as I learned more, I felt like that's too simple of an answer. I think that, we've come to a position that's sort of in between the two poles of our current system, which does very little to support donors, and incentive system, where, you know, like what I described, where the government would give, you know, some large amount of money to donate. Mm-hmm. And I think that each system that we're in between has some good parts and some bad parts. I think, you know, the people who are very much against compensation, I think compensation raises a difficult issue, which is that, you know, if you did pay everyone $50,000 to donate a kidney, you might save thousands or even more than 10,000 lives each year, which would be really incredible. And it's hard to argue that we shouldn't be doing that. We all know the suffering that kidney failure creates. But on the other hand, I think that people who are on the pro-compensation side, I think they sometimes forget that we don't want people's act of kidney donation to just feel like, they're just selling a part of themselves to make them feel like a human vending machine. That would be really tragic, I think. It's certainly not the way that I feel about my donation. And, you know, if only people who were poorly off donated, if it was exploitative, if they were treated merely as objects, that would be really awful, I think, even if it did save thousands of people's lives.
I'm sorry. I think when we talk about compensation, that monetary is great, but there are other things that happen. I had a show where a person talked about they wanted to donate, but if they did, the time that it would cost them from their job, would they would be fired. So compensation comes in so many different, you know, the money, but it's not like you're selling anything. There is a service that's needed that would actually help medical costs. Because if you can get people, you know, donations before they actually have to go on that machine, you know, that in itself is a cost base. You know, the agencies that provide dialysis, these billion-dollar corporations, God, I say that every week, these billion-dollar corporations would allow persons from coalitions to come in and organizations to come in to their centers and give out information that would assist patients. Even, like I said, with the social workers at the hospitals, before they even enter into a system where now you are enslaved to a dialysis machine until you take your last breath, and that is all. You know, and it needs to be something that we're offered, and we're not. And everything that you're saying is really true. So it's not really about monetary. It's a whole lot that goes under the word compensation, you know, that a donor would need, and they need protection too. Because if they're allowing a organ in their body to be removed and put into someone else's body, that, again, you know, but it's also, you know, it's going to cost, you know, and it's going to cost in more ways than one.
Right, right. And I think, and you really kind of read my mind there because, I wouldn't describe, you know, those kinds of support efforts as compensation exactly. We call them transplant support. Right, we think it's about supporting the patient and asking for a transplant, educating them, educating their families, helping do the ask with them, and supporting donors in making it easy to donate. And that means, you know, making sure that they're not going to lose their job, making sure that they you know are not going to be financially worse off because they donate, giving them health insurance to you know alleviate any risks of donation. I think also personally that it'd be great. If, you know, right now there's not a lot of follow-up that's done for donors. And, you know, donors often, a lot of that is sort of because, you know, the follow-up that we want is to get better data for sort of medical studies to understand the consequences of donation as well as possible. But a lot of people don't end up sort of continuing to going back to the transplant center each year. And what I think would be great to try to increase that follow-up would be if, you know, just like any other kind of clinical trial you might participate in, you received, you know, each year you did your follow-up, maybe, you know, a stipend of some kind, you know, a couple $100, something like that, so that donors, and that's not, you know, just donors in the future, but donors in the past, would make sure to go to their follow-up each year, and that way that would help all donors and give sort of better information, make sure donors were safe and treated well medically. So to us, you know, we don't think you know that it's a matter of we should compensate people and give them a lot of money to donate. We think we need to support people on both sides of that equation, of the donor and the recipient. And we think that if we do that, we really believe that can end the waiting list.
Awesome, awesome idea, really. I'm glad you're going to help. Awesome. We appreciate everything, all the information that you gave us. How is your donor doing?
So John is doing, I think, really well. So we met about 3 months after I donated, and it was an amazing experience for both me and him. I got to meet his mom, too. Like I said, John, or I think we were talking earlier, John... you know, he was on dialysis for 8 years, and it was before he got a transplant, and it was difficult for him. When, you know, it took him a little while after the transplant to sort of fully get back on his feet, and it's just been great to see him doing really well lately. John does, I guess he's what you call an activist. He does work against gang violence and against police brutality in Boston. John's a great guy. Before he had kidney failure, he was a club promoter and a semi-pro athlete. And I like John a lot. John and I, you know, talk maybe once a month or so. We get along really well. He's a really charming, eloquent, charismatic guy. You know, this time of year, I'm a really big New England Patriots fan, so I'm pretty lucky, you know, this year. But and John's a Peyton Manning and Denver Broncos fan, so he's less lucky this year. But we always kind of rib each other about that.
Sorry for John. I'm a Patriots fan too, so. Yeah. So, well, I want everybody to know that there is a Connect to Waitlist Zero on our webpage, Dialysis Advocacy. I want to thank you so much for joining us, Josh. I'm going to open up the lines now. If there's anyone out there that has any questions, our lines are open. How long have you been? Are you a practicing attorney?
I am. I finished law school in 2010, so it's been about almost 5 years now. Wow, it doesn't seem like that long ago. And I'm licensed. I'm licensed in Massachusetts. I don't, you know, enter a courtroom much in my job now, running this nonprofit and doing advocacy work. But it's obviously, you know, the law degree really helps.
Man, that's awesome. And you joined us with Dialysis Advocacy, and we appreciate that. Yay. Really do. Is there anyone else again with questions? I don't think we have any questions out there. Like we talked about last week, the changes that's going on with Dialysis Advocacy. We're going to, with our fireside chat, like we had before, only on a different note, where we'll be providing people that can help us with physical, mental, and spiritual growth. If you want to connect with us, if you'd like to volunteer with Dialysis Advocacy, if you have ideas for shows, or if you'd like to be on a show, go to Dialysis Advocacy website. When you get on the website, you can go under contact and leave us your information, and we will get back with you. Josh, we really appreciate you for being on the show tonight. Is there any closing words from you?
I think just thank you so much for having me. Thank you, everyone who listened. I hope it was interesting and useful. Please check us out on the Dialysis Advocates page. We'd love to hear from you. Feel free, you know, I like to hear from people in this community. My email is josh@waitlistzero.org. Feel free to email me anytime. You know, this policy is, you know, these policy changes are really important, and they're life-saving, and they're also really possible. They're something that we can really achieve. But to do that, you know, I think the way to getting more transplants is by having our American community support transplants more and not leaving people alone to have to deal with kidney failure on their own. And similarly, part of that is that, you know, we as a community need to get involved and get politically active in trying to make that change. So we really appreciate, you know, everyone's help in doing that and helping us achieve this really important policy. So, again, thanks to everyone who listened, and I really had a great time and really appreciate the chance to come on here tonight.
Thank you so much, Joshua. And, again, he can be contacted through his website, which is waitlistzero.org. Am I correct?
Yep, that's right.
Thank you so much. Have a blessed
night,
everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.